For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So once again, us European-based analysts are going to moan because it's an early start for the Japanese Grand Prix. Welcome to Grid Talk. My name is Tom Downey, and today we are here to look at some previews for the 2024 Japanese Grand Prix. Joining me, we have Owen Medford, who is the Grid Talk co-host.
Hello.
Hello, sir. And also we have Grid Talk legend and Grip Flip podcast host, Philip Matthew.
Hello.
I caught you off guard, didn't it, Phil? Before we get into this episode, we must thank our sponsor, Bet Online. So Bet Online is your number one source for all your betting needs. Get the latest odds, lines, and matchup reports for baseball, boxing, golf, and more. Bet Online continues, to be the fastest and easiest way to place your wagers, including live betting and your favorite casino and card games available to play right from your phone. Head to the website or use your mobile device today to sign up and get in on the action. Remember to use the promo code BLEAV, that's B-L-E-A-V, or your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, where the game starts. Also, please be sure to follow our socials at Grid Talk UK to stay up to date with the show. I would call them brand new, but they're not brand new anymore. So, Japan, certainly a driver's favourite circuit. And I'm obviously going to latch on to what we saw in Australia last week, where we saw a magnificent Ferrari 1-2, and I say that as a Red Bull fan, where we saw Carlos Sainz, you know, all 400 grams lighter as he was racing without his appendix. Do you think that Ferrari can sort of pose another threat to Red Bull in Japan, or do you think it was a bit of luck, maybe a bit of a flash in the pan, and do you think Max is going to go and wipe the floor?
And to be quite honest with you, I don't really know. I don't think there's been a sort of an applicable comparison that we've really got beyond, like, I guess if you sort of look at Saudi Arabia or something like that, but Ferrari definitely seemingly up. And I think it's going to come down a lot to car performance. And we know the Red Bull is sorted, and they had a bit, they weren't having an amazing weekend in Australia, to be honest with you. So, but Australia is always a bit different. So personally, I don't see any reason why we're not going to go to the status quo, really, with Red Bull having an amazingly dominant race. You know, I think the Ferraris will want to try and maintain this challenge. You know, if you can stop them early from gaining points, that's a big thing. And obviously, Suzuka is a massively chassis dependent circuit. It's got sort of a mix of everything with sort of high speed, middle and low speed corners. And if the car's not sorted, then it's going to become quite difficult for you. Now we know the Red Bull is sorted. It's where the Ferrari is. As much as I think, yeah, they've got the ability to do it, and clearly they are sort of rising to the challenge a bit. And I think both Charles Leclerc and Carlos Sainz together will be quite sort of formidable. Obviously, that we know they're very sorted drivers, but whether they can, you know, really sort of give Red Bull a hard time, I think remains to be seen. And my initial feeling is honestly no.
Yeah, I've got to be honest. I know I'm the host, I'm supposed to be impartial, but I am sort of inclined to agree with you there. Like you said, in Japan, obviously very, you've got to get it sorted, and you know it's a very much momentum-based track. But Phil, speaking of momentum, we're going to take a quick look at the Red Bull second team. So VCAR, AlphaTauri, Minardi, whatever you want to call it. If I call them AlphaTauri or something, it's, as I always say, whenever I'm on this, it's not me being difficult, it's just force of habit by this point. So looking at VCAB then, obviously we've got Yuki Tsunoda and Daniel Ricciardo in that seat. But coming into a home race for Yuki-ish, the engine supplier, it depends what label the Red Bull family puts on the engines this week. Looking at the season, Yuki has arguably had the measure of Daniel Ricciardo, as we've seen over the last few races. Do you think this is a bit of a turning point for Yuki? And you know, do you think maybe he can snatch some points in his home race?
Yeah, I believe it, in a sense it is a turning point for him, Tom. I mean, after all these years, he's, you know, spent a lot of time wrecking. He's spent a lot of time getting mad and cursing on the radio. He's, you know, he's done a lot of different things. And, you know, the great talent evaluator has kept him around in large part because of who powers those race cars for Toro Rosso. And so, I mean, is he better than Daniel Ricciardo right now? Yes. Does it mean that he's going to be driving to be the lackey for your favorite driver? No. But for what he is and for where he is, he's doing the job. Can they compete for points on the periphery? Yeah. I think that's what this season's going to be. That back five group is interesting, to say the least, and all the different storylines and things going on. So there could be some days where the Toro Rosso is going to end up being up there versus, you know, a Haas, or if somehow or another Alpine decides to come back to 2006 or something, or whichever form they were, or whatever, you know, or if punt, pass, and kick figure out their car, you know, like it all is dependent. So, but in terms of Yuki, and then also you're going to have Iwas taking a practice in practice one as well. So I think for the Japanese fans, they'll have plenty to be happy about this weekend or coming weekend at Suzuka for their home drivers, at least.
Yes, that's a very good point, actually. I forgot that Iwasa is doing free practice one instead of Yuki. It is Daniel. Thanks, Phil. Yeah, so the Japanese crowd will absolutely love seeing both of those drivers in their home race. And I got to be honest, Phil, when you mentioned Alpine, I've really just remembered about them. So they've been that sort of useless this year that I genuinely haven't put any talking points in today about Alpine. So Alpine, you exist. Without wanting to talk about last week too much, obviously we saw the Red Bull had that brake issue. Do you think that was sort of like a one-off? Do you think it's maybe something that sort of just happened, or do you think it might sort of plague them again in Suzuka? And if so, you know, could we see perhaps another upset on the cards?
I mean, I'm assuming that Red Bull have obviously got a fairly good ability to analyze what's going on, because obviously Max reported that, the team reported that it sort of only started on the race start. It was fine after pulling away from the formation lap, and it was on the laps of the grid. So very clearly, it's something that's manifested itself going into you're sort of applying the brakes just for the start of the Grand Prix. So as long as it's not anything that, as long as they can sort of work out where that's come from, analyze it, implement a fix, I don't think I don't think it's going to be any great problem for a team with the resources and technical ability of Red Bull to work out how to stop a brake caliper sticking on. I mean, that's not a big issue for me, as far as I can tell. If it continues, I mean, if we see it again, then I'll be happy to eat my words. But to be honest with you, I honestly just don't see it being a problem. This seems like the sort of thing that, you know, they're still relatively new cars. Remember, they've only done something in the order of about 30 or 40 hours in race trim of worth of running, and then maybe under 100 total. So these are still very new cars. We're still working out things, little kinks and little alterations that they would have made to the brake system. But other than that, you know, it's not even anything to do with the brake material. It's just a brake caliper stuck on. So I'm sure they'll find something in the system that was the issue, and they'll have fixed it.
Absolutely. I'm sure they'll pop it down to quick fit and get it sorted in no time. And Phil, just looking at the sort of like upper midfield battle, we've seen some good scraps between Mercedes and McLaren this season. I say this season, we're only, what, three races in. Now, from the races we've seen this year, it's been fairly obvious, or certainly to me anyway, that the McLaren seems to be better in the twisty section, so maybe the sort of like medium speed corners. But the Merc definitely seems to be better when it's on the straights. You know, as we saw, you know, the McLaren couldn't catch with DRS, I think it was in Saudi. Given the characteristics of the Suzuka circuit, do you think we could be in for a really good sort of like Mercedes-McLaren scrap next week? And if so, which team do you think would come out on top in race trim?
I give McLaren more of credence, I think, in race trim, and to be fair, I think overall, it's been a struggle in general for the Mercedes team to find pace, whether it's one lap or in a race. They struggle at times, depending against the car that they're going against, to be able to overtake. There's characteristics of the car that are, you know, similar to what they've had the last 2 years. The McLaren car is more balanced. They're able to manage whatever issues that seem that may have in a much more productive manner. And then on top of it, I think also the way that the dynamic is within the team, you have two young drivers there that are pushing each other very hard. And there's an energy there. There's a competitive energy that is not becoming negative for now, but you know, they're utilizing that energy and driving the team forward, and they're making those developments. They're that third team right now behind Red Bull and Ferrari. I think that this circuit is very good for both drivers at McLaren. I think Lando kind of likes these moments and big spots. And then in terms of Oscar Piastri, he'll quietly go about his business and he'll show it on the racetrack. But if you're going to say, who do I pick between McLaren and Mercedes, I'm definitely going to go and say McLaren, because they just seem to have things together. Lewis falling out with a power unit issue last race, the struggles on the setup is a disturbing trend 3 races into the season. Woody being able to go and do what he's doing, but then he had Fernando Alonso do Fernando Alonso things. And then, so it's like it was basically a wasted weekend, and the amount of points that they lost out on, we'll see how that affects them later in the season. But, I mean, Mercedes has to start figuring something out. You know, if they really want to find somebody that is a veteran presence that actually can drive, maybe be a one-year fill-in that is good, then they need to show that they have something to work with. Because the last 3 years have proven that they haven't done the right things, and Toto can whine and moan all he wants, but they're not doing the job, and they need to figure it out.
Fair enough. Well, I think it's fair to say there was some sort of real sort of half truths in that, but you know, you did make a good point that they do sort of need to figure it out a bit, and you know, it's something's obviously not clicking for that Mercedes team at the minute. You know, we're so used to them sort of being a 5-star team, and if you want to hear more of some 5-star review, I really messed that up then. I was trying to do a really good segue. Yeah, I'll just do it shamelessly. If you could take 5 Gleams of 5-star Racing on Spotify or 5-star review on Apple Podcasts for a 1-star segue like I just did, I think I've just saved it. That would be great. So, right, we'll pretend that didn't happen. And, Owen, I read an article, I think it was yesterday, maybe the day before. I lose track because it's Easter Sunday on the day of recording. And Friday felt like Saturday, yesterday felt like Sunday, and today I don't know what's happening, and tomorrow I'm just going to be all over the place, because this 4-day bank holiday weekend is just sort of like ruining me a bit. I read an article, I think it was on the F1 website actually, that James Vowse said, now I don't know the date of this publication, he said that he is unsure or sort of not 100% sure that Williams will have 2 cars in Japan after the accident sustained by Albon in Australia. I mean, what do we sort of really go with this? I'll just let you go into your engineering mode.
Yeah, I mean, so it's obviously, I mean, funnily enough, James Vowse would have been used to in this situation before, back in the Braun GP days when they only had 2 chassis. So yeah, what's happened obviously is that Williams obviously didn't have a spare chassis in Australia, and they would have hoped to have had it completed. But yeah, had a third chassis completed by now, roughly. But obviously, as things, you know, this is sort of the hangover of the incredibly difficult car build that they had with their lack of an asset management system, which is baffling to me that the Formula One team didn't have one, particularly as much as Williams. You know, this is the sort of thing that, you know, there are many you know, supermarkets, for example, in the UK have, you know, or you know, any other kind of engineering business, you should have some easy, you know, technology-backed way of, you know, of tracking things through the factory and to the point, you know, to exactly where they are. But unfortunately, they didn't have that. That's allowed things to slip. And it has meant that they didn't have a spare chassis available in Australia. What's then happened is obviously Alex Albon has had his incident that's just, you know, severely damaged the chassis. Apparently they've done a fair amount of work.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Like in Australia, they've been doing some stuff in Australia to sort of do non-destructive testing and see whether they can salvage that chassis and either continue with the current one, or unfortunately they decided that it was easier to try it or more time effective to try and fix the chassis. Brought it back very, very early, as fast as they could to their factory, and the latest update is that they should have two F1 cars without too many issues come Japan. So obviously it's still, you know, we're still in progress here, and as I know very, very well, things often can and do go wrong when you're trying to put together an engineering problem, particularly when you're not doing it from scratch. It's even harder to sort of fix things in that way. So there's going to be a delay on that third chassis, and really they just need a break. They just need to get through Japan, and then hopefully they will have those three chassis and potentially getting up towards a fourth available to them. So, I don't think there's, where I drive it, there'll always be that psychological thing of maybe I've got the duff chassis, if I've got the one that's been in quite an extensive crash. I don't think that's the case. I think it'll be repaired to be good as new, but still, yeah, obviously it's difficult, but yeah, they should be racing in Japan with two chassis. But obviously though, it shows how easily the delays and the lack of a sort of project management system to get things to completion, how that can really set you back even this far into the season when you should be building up spares.
Exactly. You know, it's, you know, we all sort of, I think we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, that, you know, Williams were, excuse me, apparently using a spreadsheet to track parts, which is just so inefficient. I can't even begin to describe sort of like, you know, how poorly managed that way. But alas, we're not going to go into that. And, you know, it's gone are the days of the T car or the spare car, the third car, where you'd see somebody stored it on the grid and jump out and run into the pit lane and grab the alternate car. You know, we don't do that here anymore, as the kids say. So, you know, it does seem a bit of a shame that, you know, that there's even the inherent risk that they might not have two cars on the grid for the second weekend in a row. But hey, maybe it means an Alpine will qualify, not knock out the back row, because there'll only be 19 cars. So, Phil, last but not least, I say that because I forgot about Alpine. Sauber have had, all, you know, Alfa Romeo Racing F1 Cake 6 Steam Sauber. That was a real mouthful. I've nailed it. But that's legit what it feels like every time I see their name. So, Sauber, as I'm going to call them, they've had a less than ideal start to the season, compounded by some pit stop misery, which no doubt has given Bottas flashbacks to Monaco 2021. It says a lot that we were celebrating I think it was like a 5 or 7 second pit stop in Australia where they didn't completely drop the ball or drop the tire, you could say, which they did manage to do because it bounced across the pit lane and they got fined. Does it look like that sort of Sauber team is finally sort of getting that kind of stuff sorted? Because If we think about Audi coming in 2026, you know, they're not going to stand for anything like that. And, you know, it's just for Sauber at the minute, do you think they're sort of just like in this transition period as we're sort of seeing?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to see who's manufacturing the wheel nuts for them this week. If they're the same ones, then we'll still have an hour pit stop for whichever, probably Zhou this week instead of Bottas. But I mean, it's the transition phase is there. They've made it clear. I mean, just by the horrendous name that they have now. The color scheme also is kind of off-putting, to be fair. And the car isn't good. So, I mean, it's just kind of, you know, you've opened the grand slam of bad there. So in terms of will they do better this week, hopefully for the sake of their drivers, they can actually make pit stops that are within the same quarter of an hour, you know, and that would be good for the field. But in terms of what does it mean across their season, I don't think right now they don't really have a whole lot of pace. So and I have a hard time believing that in this transitional phase that they're going to find it. So it may be like I forget what teams were talking about, Miami being where they're going to have their first real upgrades. Maybe that's when we'll wait to see for Sauber, whatever your name is, F1 to make that progress. And maybe they'll have new wheel nuts in Miami. Maybe they'll steal some rims off of somebody's car over there and put them on.
Yeah, something tells me those are not German wheel nuts on that car, because if they were, they just wouldn't be coming off like that. Yeah, it's just Sauber is just an odd one at the minute. You know, they're really like stuck in limbo. So I kind of feel for them, but at the same time, I don't, because, you know, it's your job, do it properly, basically. You know, and, you know, there's only sort of so much feeling sorry for teams or whatever you can do. And I suppose we should talk about them quickly. A team which I don't feel sorry for at all, Alpine. I appreciate I just got a little bit off script here, because I didn't tell you that we'd be doing this, because I forgot about them, like I said, until Phil mentioned them. So obviously they've had a pretty diabolical start to 2024 with reliability, speed issues, and, you know, sort of the kitchen sink, really. Bearing in mind what we saw last week, do you think there's any chance of them getting anything out of Japan? I'll go to you first, Owen.
Sorry, what's name is this? I'm assuming Alpine?
Alpine, yes.
Yeah, well, I mean, no. I don't see them. I don't see them doing well. The car just doesn't... I'll put it this way. They're the joint worst. They are 10th in the Constructors Championship. You know, if we sort of take a quick look at sort of the results that they've got in the last three races, I mean, it makes for pretty grim reading. You know, they are comfortably, you know, apart from obviously Bottas and Joe, who have the, you know, have the worst wheel nuts, the worst pit stops in F1, that taking them down a significant amount. By comparison, you've got Alpine who aren't having those issues, and they're still, you know, DNFing or having issues. I mean, their highest finish is, I think, a 13th place, which is, it's pretty depressing. And it takes a long time to turn that kind of thing around. Yeah, I don't think they're going to get anything out of the weekend at all, to be honest with you.
No, I think that's fair. Phil, what do you think about Alpine? Do you agree? Do you disagree? Do you plead the fifth by this point?
Yeah, I agree with everything that's been said. They were showing the highlights of the 2006 Japanese Grand Prix when the Enstone team was just a bit better and Fernando Alonso's ego wasn't as big, and he was a world champion back then. I mean, he still is, but he was winning world championships back then, and the car started in the back and they went up to the front within a couple of laps. This car is going to start in the back and is going to stay there. So it's a shame what you see, how 20 years, 15, whatever you want to, 20 years gone by and how far they've gone down. But, you know, like, it's an unfortunate byproduct, but then it's also, like you talked about it just now about going and doing your job. I'm like, who is doing their job there to let it go off the rails at that? That's the question or questions that have to be asked, and putting in that much money to run in the back in Formula One is a lot of money to look to humiliate yourself on every couple of week basis for a whole year. So they've already fired some people. There's a lot more people I probably have to go to.
Yeah, I mean, you said yourself who's doing their job. Not many people by the sounds of it, because they all keep leaving. So yeah, speaking of leaving, that's a better segue than what I did earlier. I'm just going to give you gentlemen a chance to sort of promo yourselves, or just, you know, sort of tell us a bit about yourself, you know, where we can find you, etc. So, Owen, I said you are a good old co-host. Do you want to plug any socials, anything like that?
Not anything personally, but just to sort of give you, if you want to find out anything that's happening with Grid Talk in the near future, you want to keep us up to date with the show, then please come and find us on any social media platform that you happen to use. I believe we're on them all at Grid Talk UK. That's what it is, at Grid Talk UK on all of the social medias with the app.
Absolutely. Phil, I mentioned you are the host or co-host of the Eclipse Trip podcast. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, thanks, Tom. And yeah, the Grip Strip podcast, over 200 episodes strong, year 5 of the show. And we talk about all things motorsports, we even talk about F1, albeit on my show, I spend way less time on it for obvious reasons. If you have listened to it, which guessing by how many people I do have listened to it, in very many, but it's life. The fact is we cover all things motorsports, and myself and my co-host Josh Fine, we cover stuff in the United States. We cover the world with Formula One, World Endurance Championship, Formula E, World Rally Championship, and the junior formulas as well, which is also represented here on the Grid Talk. So yeah, you can find us at Grip Strip Pod on Twitter. You can find us on YouTube. We have the page with our video feeds, and also this my personal page has the audio. And then you can find it at philipgmatthew.com as well for the audio feed of our show.
Lovely stuff. Thank you, Phil. Yeah, and you know, just for myself, I want to give a quick plug to Formula Talk, which is the sister show, which myself and Sophia host, where we cover F2, F3, F1 Academy. And certainly in the month of May, Phil, we'd like to get you on because a couple of IndyCar events going on during that month. So as does the rest of the American, I appreciate it. I just put that on you. I'd love to have you on to chat about the Indy 500 when it's around. So, yes, thank you for joining me on this glorious Easter Sunday. Grip Talk is available on YouTube, where most episodes are recorded live, as well as Amazon Fire, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Music, Verbal, Pocket Gasp. Just search Formula One Grid Talk for our back catalogue of shows with previews and reactions to qualifying and race results. Please consider supporting the channel on Patreon so we can get mics, lights, and better recording equipment. Also, make sure you are subscribed so you're the first to know when each new episode is released. We'll be back soon with plenty more F1 content. Thank you ever so much for listening to the Grid Talk podcast presented by Bet Online.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.